Welcome to Shovel Talk, a podcast for economic developers from your friends at the Golden Shovel Agency.
Hello and welcome back to Shovel Talk. I am your host, Darren Varley, and we are back with a dynamic duo from Texas, a wonderful Golden Shovel client, Grapevine, Texas Economic Development. We got Amanda Jenkins interviewing Garen Giacomaro, director with this great organization, as well as Stephen Jones, market research manager. So let's get into it right away here. So Amanda, take it away.
So you both grew up in Grapevine, left to work or go to school elsewhere, and then came back to Grapevine. So many economic developers are working to keep or bring back their younger population who have left for school or work. You've lived this. So give us a bit about your education and work history and what ultimately brought you back to Grapevine. And why don't we start with Garen?
So I grew up in Grapevine for most of my childhood. I ended up going to school in Arkansas, and then I came back to go to UNT, which is really well-known, University of Texas, really well-known MBA program for my grad school. It happened during the Great Recession when the job market was horrible, and so I tried to stay out of it as long as I could by going to grad school and extending that delay a little bit. So ended up working full-time for my first city during that time as well. I started off part-time and ended up getting promoted to full-time. That was when I thought I made a huge mistake, but I actually did not like city government at all. I decided to go to city government instead of law school because I had a very persuasive advisor at college who said that she thought I would be good in city government. So I was worried that I made one of the biggest mistakes of my life. And then I got put on the economic development projects, and it's basically kind of been a love affair ever since. Economic development specifically is something I'm really interested in. So I was here for a couple of years in the DFW area. My wife and I ended up moving up to the Nashville area, which I really liked. But then this job came over back in Grapevine. And there are a couple of times I thought, well, I boomerang back home, and should I be embarrassed about that? Honestly, there is no better place like in the country or in the state of Texas to be than in the DFW area for what I did, for economic development. The industry is booming here, and it's a pretty special time and place to be working in economic development. So that was part of what brought me back here. Plus, you know, it's hometown. It's kind of special to be working for your hometown. So.
Definitely. And I definitely want to get into a couple of your development projects going on. But Stephen, tell us a bit about your journey leaving Grapevine and then returning.
Yeah, so I grew up in Bedford, which is right across the street, essentially, from Grapevine, depending on, you know, where you're crossing into the city. And my first job out of college was at a nonprofit called Six Stones Mission Network. I was the communications department, which was a lot of fun, wore a lot of hats. But one of my frustrations there was that we were doing a lot of really good work. But the one thing that we couldn't do was really get to the root cause of a lot of the issues that we were trying to solve, which really was just that people needed more good jobs that paid well. So I got recruited out of Six Stones here to the city because one of the city council members that we were working with at the time really liked me and wanted to add my talent to the staff here. So I got pulled in and was really excited to work in economic development and help create those quality jobs that are so lacking. It was just a really cool extension of the career that I was already on, the career track that I was already on, and couldn't be more excited to be using the skills that I developed there in a new way here in Grapevine.
So one of the challenges that economic developers run into is that to grow, you have to change, and that's not always well received by the community. Since you grew up in Grapevine, you're actively working to grow the community that you know really well, that you're really connected to. How do you balance this personally and then also within your community connections?
That's a good question, because it's one of the things I've noticed since I've been here. I've been in the department for about 8 years, but I have a lot of memories of Grapevine from growing up. I used to go, there's a Chili's that we always went to after my little league games growing up. It's like that Chili's is still here.
Love Chili's.
so there's the, yeah, it's kind of it's sprinkled with nostalgia. But it's kind of interesting, though, because a lot of those brands are going away naturally. Like a lot of them are turning away. We had a California Pizza Kitchen that was really iconic that went away a few years ago, you know, things like that. So the market's taking care of a lot of the change that the change is coming whether we want it or not. obviously. So in a city like Grapevine, there are a lot of staples that people remember. They want it to stay the same. At the same time, the market's going to bring in, you know, new uses, whether you want it to or not. So it's not really a matter of if we are going to let it change or not. It's more how we're going to react to that change that's coming anyway. So, you know, we've had, you know, this department has gotten a lot younger recently. You know, this is something that we're looking at new ways of doing things. We're looking at doing things differently than we have in the past. In the past, we've been a lot more of we let projects come to us, the ones that want to be here, that those are the ones we kind of filter through. We're a lot more aggressive now about going out and getting businesses. And that includes the interesting new ones, like stuff like Meowl, things that most people, when I tell them we're getting a Meowl, they say, that's great. What is that? You know, and it's these things that maybe they're not really, they don't really understand it coming in, but once they land and once the business opens, it's something that they're really excited about. So, it's more about embracing the change and riding the wave than it is about, you know, trying to force it one way or another. Because like I said, the change is coming out of our office.
So growing up in Grapevine, was there something that you wish was in town but wasn't? And have you brought that in?
You know, I didn't have many complaints, especially here. We have a lot of neighboring communities that it's not in Grapevine, there's something nearby. You know, but I did learn a lot about Greenland once I started working here. We have a whole industrial sector that I didn't know existed. I mean, I've lived here for several years, and we have a lot of logistics and manufacturing and things that I literally had no idea existed until I started here. So that was pretty interesting to see kind of the true base of Grapevine once you start working for the city. But you know, honestly, it's new restaurants, any new market concepts are always going to be super popular. Then it's destination entertainment, and then it's touristy, that it's new and interesting. That's always going to be popular. So, yeah, growing up, there was always something to do somewhere. And we're just doing everything we can to make sure that somewhere is usually Grapevine.
Awesome. Steven, did you have any projects or anything you wanted as a child in Grapevine that now is coming to fruition?
Yeah, I think for a long time in my brain, Grapevine was really far away. I didn't realize as a kid that I had been to Grapevine a whole bunch. It was literally the school district next door to our school district. But whenever like our teams would play Grapevine or Colleyville, it was like, oh man, they're going all the way to Grapevine. And it was, you know, 5 minutes down the road. And I also didn't register that like every time we went on a family trip, we left through Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, which is in Grapevine. So I had been to Grapevine hundreds of times. It just seemed to me like a faraway place. And I hadn't seen Main Street and I knew of it. It just felt like such a destination. I was kind of removed from it. And honestly, that's part of what City Council has done really well in the way that they strategically built this community. When the airport arrived in the 70s, they knew it was going to change the structure and the fabric of the city. And they really leaned into the idea of turning Grapevine into a destination, of making it a place that people would want to come and visit, have a bite to eat, enjoy some unique entertainment, and really get to live or stay at some really high quality hotels and conference centers. So it took a few decades, but they really have structured the city in a way that takes advantage of our geographical location being at the center of the Metroplex and having access to a bunch of really good infrastructure. And I think that is kind of a misnomer, that you can either retain what you have or make progress. And I think there's a way to do both. I think that our city proves that change and preservation aren't opposites. They can go hand in hand. And that's one of the things I think that we do very well, is we use our history to generate our future.
That's so true. And that's, I think that's something that all economic developers are trying to do, is how do we preserve, but also move forward and grow. That's awesome that you guys have been able to do that. So you mentioned the Meow Wolf project. I think the Meow Wolf project would excite the kid in all of us. So can you share a bit about this project, Garen?
All right, so first of all, it's not a pet supply store. That's what most people are assuming it is. This is real quick. So the story behind it, it's basically a company built on the back of a bunch of artists who got together, and they say their first all-hands-on-deck meeting, they had everyone put words into a hat and just drew out the first two words, and that's how they named their company.
Oh,
so that's
my goodness.
That's It doesn't make any sense, but you know, artists are gonna artists, you know.
That's a fun story.
It is a fun story. it does make branding a little more difficult, but yeah, it's the quality of the branding that people understand what that means. Well, I was at a show in Los Angeles in January, and like, everyone was like, "Congratulations on it!" You know, everyone knows what it is. Like, West is here, and only about probably half the people here in Texas actually know what it is. So it's basically the best description I heard of it was it's like crawling into a painting and exploring it for a few hours. Which is a good way to put it. It's kind of this psychedelic, family-friendly experience. There's no narration. There's no tour guide. But it's an interactive art exhibit that you go through and you explore. And there's like this whole implied story that's happening in the background. There are four locations. Ours will be the fourth. They have one in Santa Fe and Denver and Las Vegas. Each location is like really different from the other one. They're all part of this whole art and story. So it's in 40,000 square feet of space out of the mall. The mall is part of the theming that they're going to be talking about at the location. They haven't really given a lot of detail, even to us, about what's going to be there. So we're going to find out what everyone else does. But it's, you know, we've seen projections of, 600,000 unique visitors, which is the size of like a small baseball team, basically, in terms of new visitors to the mall. So we think that's a huge win, obviously. The kind of thing where if you're a huge fan of Meow Wolf, you want to go to every location. So people from other states will fly in here to come figure out this part of the puzzle and the story, which is exactly, that's what Great Pack built. It's a ton of hotels, a ton of hospitality, a ton of charm, and a ton of a unique destination. You have to go there to see it kind of a thing. So it's always been a really good fit for Great Nine. I'm really glad to see it. It's connected to being June is the last thing I heard. It maybe pushed a little bit, but so far June of this year. So here pretty soon.
So I read that Texas has the largest visitation numbers to the existing Meow Wolf locations, and that's ultimately how they knew that they wanted to locate in Texas. So how did Grapevine secure that fourth permanent exhibition?
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before. And Stephen may know a little bit more about this than I do. He's worked really closely with them, but I do know that one of their co-founders was from the area. They started off, like Santa Fe was their original location, but I think part of the reason they came back is he was familiar with the area. I have to imagine that how accessible we are. We have a huge international airport, highways all over, 20 minutes outside of downtown Fort Worth in Dallas. It's the reason that everyone else comes to Grapevine, the crossroads of the Metroplex, essentially. But it really is. I mean, the Texas miracle is happening all over again. Like, this is the center of the universe when it comes to new development. Us in Phoenix, it seems like, or us in Arizona, is where the rest of the country is kind of looking for exciting new development. So being able to put something in the heart of Texas, I imagine it was too good of an opportunity to pass up. Going into a vacant mall space too, I think really probably was something that they were interested in. Like I said, I think that's part of the theme too. So, and not to get off too far of a tangent, but our mall is really good at pivoting to a way. When they lose big box retail, they do a really good job of securing something new and unique to go in instead. And it's just another.
My understanding is that Meow Wolf had kind of kicked around a mall concept for a while. They had been interested in the idea of doing something inside of a shopping mall. If you've been to any of their exhibits, you know that like Omega Mart in Las Vegas is a really interesting look at a supermarket and sort of an artistic critique of consumerism. So it makes sense thematically why they would want to choose a mall. One of the really cool things about our shopping center in particular is that one of their founders, Matt King, actually was at the grand opening of our mall in 1997. Like, he went there as a kid. So he had sort of an emotional tie to the place, and I think he was familiar with it already. I know that when they came in for a tour, they were really impressed by the way that leadership at Simon Property Group has really re-envisioned that center, because it was built in 97 and it felt like a mall that was built in 97, at least for a little while. And they've done a really good job of innovating out there, putting in new and interesting uses that help to draw foot traffic into the mall. They partnered with the city to do a really big renovation of it to update the interior space so that it's a nice place to be. And that is now a top 1% of all regional malls location. Like, for foot traffic in the U.S., it is in the 99th percentile. So there's a common conception that malls are dying, and I don't think that's accurate. I think bad malls are dying. And this is a mall that has really thrived by adapting to the time and meeting consumers where they are. It helps that we're close to that international airport and we have all that infrastructure. We end up actually with a pretty big international audience, at least according to the marketing manager and the general manager out there at the Mills. They say that some of their most impactful markets are China, Mexico, and Australia, which you would not expect here in the middle of North Texas. But you get a really big, interesting draw. And I think the people behind Meow Wolf saw that when they came to tour. They saw that it was a space that draws in all kinds of people from all kinds of places that really fit the vibe that they were looking for and that had a track record of innovating and drawing in folks who maybe wouldn't go to just a traditional shopping mall, but they'll go to Grapevine Mills because it's different. I think that's why it proved to be such a good fit. I know they get a lot of traffic from Texas at their other exhibits, so they don't currently have any exhibits in Texas. Ours will be the first when it opens here in July. And they knew that was their number one market for visitors, was people came from Texas to those locations. More from Texas than any other state, except for the states where they already had a location. So they knew they wanted Texas. I think they zeroed in on the DFW Metroplex just because it's so huge. There's millions of people here. It's kind of a no-brainer. I think narrowing it down to Grapevine was really the big hurdle there, and it helped that we had a center that just really fit what they were looking to do.
Awesome. So we've talked about what Grapevine means for them. What do they mean for Grapevine? What does the future look like for you guys from this project?
I think it's really representative of the kind of the premier products that we're chasing right now. I mean, it's, you always get more refreshment. You can always get land projects, and these are all really important, but it's the marquee ones, the ones that really grab people all over Texas. They're going to be talking about this one. People all over the country are talking about this when it opens. And, one of the important things that came up early on is they wanted to brand it as Meow Wolf Dallas. And that was one of our sticking points. It's Meow Wolf Grapevine. It's, obviously maybe not as big as Dallas, but man, do we pack our own punch, And so putting Grapevine on the map, it's something that we've been doing since, the Gaylord opened back in, 2000, since the airport opened in the 70s. It's something that Grapevine is an outstanding community. It has a really unique dynamic to it. And we can show you all the unique things that we have. And Meow Wolf is just one more thing that we have that really fits into the dynamic of not just, the personality of the city, but the economics of the city. We are geared towards having tourists come here and spend the day here and then go home. Like, that's basically what our model is. It helps subsidize a lot of things we do for our residents. So we're perfectly set up for the kind of thing that they want to do. They've already kicked off more development, which is their announcement. And it's trying to get into the mall because they know Meow Wolf will be there. They're entertainment concept I'm talking to right now that are like, how close can we get to Meow Wolf? So kind of this cascading effect of, you get this one in and there's secondary and tertiary development that happens from that. I love the domino effect. Those are nice.
You mentioned the TexRail project. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Steven, you go ahead.
I live in North Richland Hills now, so that's a couple of communities over to the west, but I am right next to the train station, so I can hop on the TexRail train and sometimes take my bike on the train. They have a nice little rack where I can just hang it up and take a 10 to 15 minute ride, depending on if you have to stop for another train to pass, right into the heart of Grapevine here on Main Street. I can hop off and take my bike down the street, and it takes me less time to park my car, take my bike on the train, ride the train, and then take the bike to Main Street than it would if I just drove straight to City Hall. So it's a really relaxing commute. It's very convenient, and you kind of can't beat not having to sit in traffic. It's really nice to let someone else do the driving and just kind of let your mind wander and decompress before or after the workday. I really love my commute. It's great. I think a lot of people are starting to accept that new wave of infrastructure here in Texas. I think when people think of our state, there's a stereotype that we either ride horses or drive trucks. And that's not necessarily accurate. Ridership has been rising on the TexRail line since it opened. We had a little hiccup in 2020 when the pandemic sort of shut everything down. But I think we've now passed those numbers, and Grapevine Main Street is the number one stop for them on a line that includes, I think, six or seven stops. It goes from Fort Worth all the way to the terminal at DFW International Airport. So during the week, the airport is the number one stop, but on the weekends and especially on Saturdays, Grapevine Main Street is where people go, and we get huge surges of ridership when we host festivals, and it's just a really convenient way to come in, and we shut down Main Street and do a big party. It's really cool, and you can just walk off the train directly into the festival, show your ticket, and you're in for the day. It's a really good time. And that's also, I mean, it's a great example of a public-private partnership. I mean, we own a portion of that land. Trinity Metro owns a portion of the attached parking garage, and then we have a hotel operator called Corey Hospitality that runs Hotel Vin. And all of those spaces are interconnected, and they were really envisioned together in partnership. We have a food hall there that was not the city's original vision. It was pitched by Corey Hospitality, and City Council did some research and decided they really liked the concept. They wanted to lean into it. So just a really awesome example, but I will confess that I was a civilian at the time that that came together. So, Garen, you might know more about how that project came to be.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see it come to fruition, because a lot of the concept drawings and things, it turned out exactly like we planned it would be, honestly. And there's a huge plaza outside. The food hall has been a huge hit and continues to be a huge hit. There's a lot of public money in that building, so we're pretty invested in the success of that development. So far, honestly, it's everything we wanted it to be. It's spurred a lot of development up and down this crossroad called Dallas Road. That's something that our department's working on now. It's the further development of the transit district that's formed because of that. So it's just the linchpin of like a lot of future plans we have. That said, the original vision for it was from the mayor. He basically said, Grapevine was successful because of the train, and now we're doing that again, essentially. It was for different reasons, but it's still the train. He still feels really strong with that transportation and access, infrastructure. Like, that's honestly what got us to where we are, and that's what the way we're going to write in the future.
Awesome. The first thing I thought when you said you're able as a local to go to the airport, not drive, is no parking fees. No parking fees at the airport.
Amanda, I do want to clarify. There's a long-term parking lot at the train station. You're not meant to park for more than 24 hours because it is a commuter line. But there's a paid section of the lot for people who need to leave their car there for longer trips. So if you want to take the train into the airport and not have to park at the airport, that's definitely an option. It's probably cheaper to park out there. But they generally don't want people leaving their cars in the lot, except for those special places, more than 24 hours.
So you mentioned a food, some sort of food court. I did read a little bit about the hub in Grapevine, and it's kind of old timey. Can you tell us a little bit about the train station in Grapevine? And then you also mentioned you can take it directly into downtown. How has it transformed your main street?
It's the food hall is called Harvest Hall. And it was one of the early concepts we had that went in there. That's kind of what we envisioned it's a partnership with Corey Hospitality. They're out of Oklahoma. They manage it. And like I said, it's been very successful. I mean, Grapevine has been popular for its festivals for like years and years. Like that's one of the main things we're known for. We have one in May called Main Street Fest. We have one in September called Grape Fest. That's a big wine festival. And then we're the Christmas capital of Texas, which is a whole separate interview I'm doing. So honestly, it's like 40 days of Christmas. It's insane. But
we might have to have you guys back in December then on the podcast. Sure. Because I'm a big Christmas fan. So
it's funny you say that, because there's a podcast episode that Stephen put together that's all about how we became the Christmas capital of Texas. So if you want to get even more detail on that, there's a lot of detail there. But the Harvest Hall in particular just served this need of all the festival goers. Honestly, there's like how many restaurants? Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think. 6 restaurants in there that occasionally they turn over and become a new concept. We just had 3 new ones go in, a coffee bar. But that place is packed all the time. But it's perfect for meetings, it's perfect for hanging out. There's like a separate section for like karaoke and trivia night and things like that. But it really feeds into the Main Street vibe. Then you can walk up and down Main Street and end up at this place, and you know everyone's happy because there's a bunch of different types of food. You know, and food halls as an industry are like blowing up right now. I went to there was a conference in Los Angeles where they were talking about the exponential growth of food halls over the last several years, and really becoming kind of a new wave. There's one in Legacy West, which is in Plano, which is east of us, that's really popular. You know, there are several that's really become a popular concept around here. So it's something we wanted to capitalize on. That has, like I said, largely been pretty successful, especially looking at some of their sales numbers over the last year. Like they've it's been pretty successful. So the train helps. The reason we're the number one stop on the weekend is, one, because people like to do the weekend up and down Main Street. Like, that's a very popular thing to do. But our festivals are one of the things that are make us such a huge draw. There's people who want to come out and have a good time, eat a lot, drink a lot, you know, just hang out, and then not have to worry about driving or getting there or parking. Parking is a constant challenge for us. It's something we're improving upon a lot, but it's a lot easier to hop on a train too. So it's really made us stand out from the other stops so far. Is people are usually coming here for Grapevine, not like, oh, let's stop at this random stop. They're calling them two great minds. This is just another convenient way to get there.
Sometimes projects like a commuter rail or even Meow Wolf, you know, those big projects, they can sometimes lead to backlash in the community. Have you dealt with that at all with this? And how do you manage that?
You know, I've been in communities like that before. It's the group that really wants a new Chipotle and the group that really wants to keep their farmland exactly the way it is. Like that, those are kind of the two eternal forces, right, that are always in competition with each other. I will say in Grapevine, there's not a whole lot of that. It feels like development and growth is something that we've been experiencing and embracing for decades now. You know, Mayor said before, you know, you're not growing, you're dying. Like that's pretty accurate. And it's something that we really aspire to. There's always going to be a lot of change going on, especially in such a dynamic market as Texas and DFW. Like I said, staying still isn't really an option anymore. So honestly, I think a lot of our residents understand that. You know, bringing in visitors and reducing sales tax, which is pretty much our number one goal, helps subsidize things we do for residents. Basically, our property tax rate, the city property tax rate, is one of the lowest in the state for a city our size. They lower every chance they can get, the city council does. And they do that because they have a, you know, outsized sales tax production. So, you know, there's kind of an agreement, you know, that, yeah, we're going to have tourists. Yes, we're going to have visitors. Yes, Grapevine will change, but you know, the city council really looks after its constituents and its residents because of that. You know, that extra revenue is something that helps them do that.
So I do want to talk a little bit about your guys' marketing. You have a podcast that is pretty, it sounds like it's been pretty successful. Anything else you want to add though about your projects before we chat about that?
We'll say that we also have some city-owned property. There's a whole backstory to that. We bought it out of bankruptcy from a former Texas Ranger player, Rafael Palmeiro. We've been developing that the whole time I've been here. So that's actually a big part of the reason why the department was created, was to develop this acreage called the 185, and it's 185 acres. We developed about two-thirds of it, so about a third of it left. That's a really interesting project because the city doesn't really like buying land. It's not really a business we're in. But this is kind of like the one big exception we made. We've had some really big wins out there. Kubota, which is an agricultural equipment company, they relocated from, that was one of the ones we stole from California. They basically moved their North America headquarters here to Grapevine. Paycom is an HR software company that doesn't seem like a big deal on the face of it, and yet they are a huge deal because they produce a ton of sales tax. It essentially, whenever they sell any of their software anywhere in the state of Texas, the sales tax comes through Grapevine. So it's a huge sales generator for us. You know, we've got other things out there too, but we're still developing it. And that's been an interesting journey because, like I said, essentially the department was created back in 2014 to develop this piece of property. It's really the genesis of kind of what the department's become. So I always like talking about that project. It's pretty fun.
Very cool.
But I'll let Steven talk about it.
I really want to hear about your experience starting the podcast. There's a lot of economic development organizations that I work with right now that are starting podcasts. And so they definitely ask about it. Obviously Golden Shovel has a podcast too. And so I really noticed there are quite a few podcasts popping up. You've had yours for a little while. Tell us about your experience in starting it and how that's going.
Yeah, podcasts are the hot new thing, right? I mean, we were sort of late to the game. We're definitely not in that early surge of podcasts up there with, you know, This American Life and Serial. And I'm no Ira Glass. But I think we're at a point now culturally where people like to have a way to get information and to learn while multitasking. I know I like to listen while I'm like doing chores around the house or working in the yard. And podcasts are a really cool way to do long form content without having to lock your audience in. I think people have short attention spans these days. It's really hard to hold somebody for more than 30 seconds. And the kind of work that we do takes more than 30 seconds to explain, especially the way that we've chosen to do it in our podcast, which is a little more narrative. So if you want to get into the kinds of details that I want to get into, if you want to do long form storytelling, which is what I prefer, podcasts are kind of an ideal medium. And I wish I could say that we launched the podcast strategically to make use of those factors. But really what happened was the director who hired me ended up leaving shortly thereafter, but he saw that I had radio experience on my resume and sort of floated, hey, could we do a podcast? And I said, yeah, that would be really cool. It was something I had thought about doing back when I worked at Six Stones, but I just never had the time or capacity. So we made some little mock-up trailers for him to listen to before he fully approved the project. And he ended up leaving the department before he could approve it. And the person they brought in to replace him was a younger guy who was super hip and was just instantly invested in the idea of a podcast. We actually had a little bit of back and forth because he envisioned it more as a, you know, 10 to 15 minute sit down and chat with someone in the community or a big name in economics and put out like a fairly regular update. And I, having grown up listening to the more long form story driven podcasts and being a big fan of like This American Life and Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History, I really wanted to do more of the experiential, narrative driven, research based storytelling that those guys do, that some of the really compelling podcasts do, where you're going to interview a lot of people and get a lot of information, then synthesize it down and figure out how to organize it in a way that's easy to process and kind of fun to take in. So what we ended up doing was compromising at the launch of the podcast and putting out the premiere episode is sort of my format. And then the next few episodes are sort of the format that the director preferred, the kind of one-on-one interview. And then we switched back and did a mini series in my format, and those episodes performed better. So that's the format that we're sticking with. And it, you know, to be fair, they probably did better because I was probably more passionate about doing it that way. And when you're passionate, you get a better end product.
Grapevine is a great story and has a lot of great stories. And that's why that way makes more sense to me. It's not really about cold calling or, you know, like trying to produce as much content as possible. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of great suburbs in DFW, but Heart is like uniquely awesome. Like, let us tell you about that. Stephen does a great job of that. Production wise, quality wise, there.
This is a storied community. People are really proud of the history here in Grapevine, and people in Grapevine love Grapevine. So part of the approach here was to sort of take advantage of that natural enthusiasm and boost our signal organically. If you put out a product that reflects the city well to people who love the city, they're going to naturally be proud of it. They're going to like it. They're going to consume it. And they'll hopefully, you know, share it with their friends and post the links on their social media channels. So you get a little bit of free exposure that way. And, you know, in our field, it's really hard to do a broad wave message. If you're trying to find and recruit users, sometimes you have to start with a really broad funnel and channel it down. And sometimes you have to be looking for a really specific kind of person that's really hard to get a podcast in front of. So the broader net you can cast, the better. And that's the advantage of something like a podcast that the citizens themselves are going to enjoy and boost for you. It helps you get it in front of people who, you know, are empowered to make decisions or who might be interested in the city. And honestly, we just brought on a third team member, Anna, and her job is going to be to go out there and preach the gospel of Grapevine. And hopefully, if I did my job right, this is a cool tool for her to have in her back pocket as she's engaging with people that, you know, if they're really interested in Grapevine, or if she says something that piques their interest, she can point them to the podcast and say, oh, there's an episode about this if you want to know more. She can sort of use it to get people excited or get people on board. And if I did my job right, it's sort of like having your market research on the city prepackaged for you in a way that's fun and hopefully a little more consumable. And we've actually even had some developers who have listened to episodes about areas of the city where they're developing and then used that episode as a tool to help them explain what they were doing to other people. So it's a neat way to sort of empower the people around you, starting first and foremost with Anna, who's absolutely going to crush it at her job. We're very confident.
That's awesome. Yeah, what I have noticed, I think, about your podcast, and what I really like is I feel like you balance the, you know, informational, educational pieces really well with being entertaining and fun. The Christmas Capital episode, you know, the April Fools, you know, your ideas of episodes and ideas of things to do with the podcast is just, I've really liked to watch, and it's been really neat to see. And I know you had a one go viral. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the episodes and how you come up with them, and you know, if there's any specific episodes you want to mention and give a shout out to.
So when it comes to specific episodes and the structure of a series, I sort of start with a sense of the grand narrative that I'm trying to explore. So season one is very much about the growth of the city from 1973, when the airport started coming in, to 2023. And the sort of 50 years of boom that came along with the development of all the infrastructure here, and how the city and leadership here in the city really positioned us for success, and some of the big projects and landmarks along the way. Season two, we're exploring Grapevine Mills. We're doing a lot more of a deep dive into that shopping center, what makes it so unique, and how it's really sort of a microcosm of the city itself. The April Fool's Day episode in particular is kind of a funny story, because it happened because of a production error. We had intended to put out one episode a month, and we ended up putting out two episodes one month, and that left a gap in our schedule that I had to fill, and the gap just kind of happened to be in April. So I was trying to come up with ideas to fill that space, and I had seen that one of our wineries here on Main Street operates a ghost tour. So I walked into the director's office and said, I have a crazy idea. It involves ghosts and April Fool's Day. And he sort of did the like lean in and go on. So it got approved sort of by accident. And then it did really well. One of the ghost stories on the tour is about Bonnie and Clyde, the, you know, infamous criminals. They have a little bit of backstory, a little history here in Grapevine. So we dove into that connection. And then, of course, we had to tie it back to economic development, because it's an economic development podcast. We talked about how people like the operators at that winery can really take advantage of the history of the city. And again, just a great example of how we've used that history and culture here to build something for the future. And that episode, I think because it was April Fool's Day, we ended up having a little more fun than we probably should have had. I definitely let my creative brain run wild. There are a lot more sound effects in that one. At one point, I think I'm reading a clip from an old newspaper, and I'm like doing an old school newsy voice. So it's a little weird, but it's weird in a fun way. And I think as people responded to it, that sort of freed me to be a little bit more myself in hosting the podcast. So as you listen through the episodes, you'll start to hear more of my like bad dad joke sense of humor coming out. But honestly, I think that's important, to be authentic and to know what your distinguishing factors are. And I'm fortunate that my personality seems to be jiving decently with the personality of the city itself. And then, of course, if you do an April Fool's Day episode, you kind of are committed, right? Like, if that's the bit, you have to come back the next April Fool's Day and do another April Fool's Day episode. So this year we put out an alternative history of Grapevine, because at one point we were one of the top runners up for Amazon's HQ2 project. So we talked to one of the senior civil engineers here at the city about how that would have transformed the city. We talked to the gentleman who was the director at the time about what the pitch for HQ2 looked like and how those things come together and why they're a big deal for the community. And we got to sort of envision what would Grapevine have looked like with a big old Amazon office tower here in the center of it, right next to the airport, which is kind of cool. And also a great way to feature that, like, the land they were considering is still available. So at some point, I'm sure we'll have another office unit. We'll have another office user come looking, and we'll be able to say, well, you know, Amazon almost looked here. And if you want to know more about that story, we have a podcast about it. So really it's become a tool for us and for developers and residents to help recruit on our behalf. And I think that's a valuable piece of the puzzle. It sort of helps us tell our story and draw new people in.
Very cool. So what would you tell other EDOs interested in starting a podcast? What advice would you give them?
Okay, advice for newcomers. The first thing I would say, and this is kind of silly, but I think it's essential, is that you have to make the initial investment up front. We put a lot of money into our recording equipment to make sure that we were getting quality sound. Because in this day and age, if you're putting out video or audio content, it kind of has to be pretty good quality if people are going to stick around. They will close a video or stop listening to a podcast if it hurts their ears or they can't tell what's going on. So it's kind of important to have the right equipment in place and to really invest in the software and the engineering required to make it sound good. But then on a more important and strategic note, I think it's essential to be authentic to your community. I love our podcast. I think it's great. I hope that others listen to it and are entertained and think it's a great product. But at the end of the day, don't copy the Growing Grapevine podcast. Our podcast is about Grapevine. Your podcast is about your city. So don't do what we did. Do what fits your city. I think you have to know your story and the story that you want to tell. You have to know the heart and soul of the community and really embrace that. So maybe you do need to do more of that, featuring the small business or the local homegrown story. Maybe you need to do a lot more historical highlighting than even we do. It's going to vary from community to community, and it's important to not put yourself in a box. I think the exploratory process and the brainstorming at the front end is really important to the overall creative process. I would not have known how to structure any of our episodes or seasons if we didn't kind of have a sense of the story we wanted to tell and the purpose of the podcast itself. So know who you are, know who you want, how you want people to understand you, and start from there. I think you can grow by doing that. And you get a natural boost, I think, too, just by highlighting the local stories. I think there's a gap in media these days in local coverage. We get a lot of national news, and we have some really great national reporting systems, but local reporting has kind of shriveled up a little, just because funding structure is difficult for that kind of thing. So to fill that need and to really highlight local faces and success stories, I think is good for your community. And it's good for you too, because people get excited when they see their friends or themselves being highlighted, and you'll get a natural boost just from highlighting those people who are in your community, who are known in your community and loved in your community. You'll get a lot of reciprocal shares and likes and comments and all the sort of engagement that drives communication in the digital world.
Yeah, and I mean, with any content, I think that's so true. Okay, well, thank you both so much for being on the podcast. I really enjoyed talking with you about the projects you have going on. Meow Wolf is very exciting. Sounds like a great project. But again, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for having us, Amanda. It was a lot of fun.
All right, that will do it for Shovel Talk. But before I go, gotta plug some Golden Shovel stuff. You know the drill. Facebook, like us at Shovel Toss. Twitter, follow us at Gold Shovel. LinkedIn, follow us, Golden Shovel. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, please, at Golden Shovel Agency. Also, we just released a wonderful new ebook, How to Create a Data Center Attraction Strategy, featuring best practices from Google, Meta, and Amazon. We've got some wonderful response with this. You can go to the Golden Shovel website. Got that nice little pop-up that'll direct you to the page to download. So please check that out. We will be back very soon with a new episode of Shovel Talk. Thank you for joining us.